We're doing Parashat Vayeshev. We'll quickly go over the story and then we'll learn it with more depth. So Yaakov has buried his favorite wife Rachel, and he's bringing up two orphans, Yosef and Binyamin. And Yosef befriends the children of Bilhah and Zilpah that are treated as second-class citizens in the home. And Yosef befriends them and takes good care of them. And he brings bad words about his siblings to his father. He tells his father what his brothers are doing wrong. Yaakov gives Yosef a preferential treatment. Yosef is the smartest of the kids. He's brilliant, and yet whatever Yaakov tries to teach him, he figures it out quickly. And Yaakov makes all the kids a special garment. And for Yosef's garment, he puts another color at the edge of the sleeve. Imagine everyone gets a blue blazer, and Yosef gets a blue blazer with pasim, with a red stripe around the sleeve. But that's enough to make everyone jealous, because he's got the different one, and it means everything to them. So they see that Yosef is favorite, and so they hate him, and they cannot talk to him in peace. At least they're honest. They don't make believe they're friendly to him. And Yosef has a dream, and he tells the brother, "I dreamt we were making piles of wheat in the field, and mine stood up, and all of yours came around it and bowed to it." And they say, "You think you're going to be king over us?" They hate him even more. He has another dream. He tells him, "I dreamt that the sun and the moon and 11 stars are bowing to me." And his father sees that the brothers are jealous and upset at him. So he says, "What you dreaming things like that? Your mother's dead. Where's your mother in the dream? You really think we're all going to bow to you?" And he yells at him in front of the brothers, trying to placate them. And in the back of his mind, he says, "Wait, it's still going to happen. If that's what he's dreaming, this is my continuum. Yosef is my chosen child. I meant to marry Rachel. I never meant to marry Leah and the other wives. So Yosef is my firstborn. He will be king." And he's waiting to see, when's this going to come true? The brothers go to shepherd their sheep in Shechem. Now that's dangerous territory. They have many enemies there. They're going to a place that historically did not have good tidings for the Jewish people. And Yaakov tells Yosef, "Go check out how your brothers are doing. Go check out how they're grazing the sheep." Yosef was very smart, and he'd always know what was the best way to take care of the sheep as well. So Yosef goes, and his father accompanies him down the hill. He walks in part of the way. And as he's going, the first place he comes, his brothers aren't there. He comes to Shechem, and they're not where they're supposed to be. So the angel Gabriel comes and asks him, "What are you seeking?" He says, "I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they're grazing the sheep?" And Gabriel tells him, "They've left this." "They've left this" has dual meaning. He's either referring to the first thing Yosef said, "I'm looking for my brothers," and he's saying they've left this concept of brotherhood. He says, "I hear him saying they're going to persecution." What a name of a place, Dothaina. Dothaina, our sages, means finding religious reasons for persecution. That's what Dothaina is alluding to, from the word dat. They're looking for religious reasons to persecute you. And Yosef goes in pursuit of his brothers. He's going in pursuit of that connection. And they see him from afar. And they start talking about how they're going to kill him. They say, "There's the dreamer. He wants to bump us all out of being the inheritors of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. He keeps telling our father how bad we are. And he figures that he will take the heritage of the Jewish people. He will be the continuum of the Jewish people. He's threatening our spiritual future. Let's kill him and throw him in one of the pits here. And then we'll be able to say a wild animal killed him. Let's see what happens with all those dreams that he's going to rule." And Reuven hears this. He's the eldest. And he saves him. He says, "We can't kill him." He says, "Leave him in the hands of God. If Hashem wants him dead, put him in one of the pits here in the desert. No one will hear him. No one will take him. And let's see what happens to him." And Reuven figures that night, he'll creep back to the pit. He'll draw Yosef out of the pit. He'll allow Yosef to come home. And when they come back home, they'll meet Yosef there. And Reuven will say, "You see, God obviously doesn't want him dead. We said we'd leave him in the pit and see what happens to him. You see, he made it home." And no one will know that that's what Reuven did. So when Yosef gets to the brothers, they pounce on him. And they take off that chosen garment, and they throw him in the pit, and they sit down to eat, and they look up, and there's a caravan coming. And Yehuda says, "You know, we didn't benefit anything by killing him. Let's just sell him to the Ishmaelites. We send him down to Egypt. Nothing will happen of him. He'll never be king." And so they sell him. And Reuven has been hiding. He's far away. He's waiting for nighttime to fall, so he could creep back to the pit and take Yosef out of the pit. So he comes back at night, he creeps to the pit, he starts yelling, Yosef, Yosef, he doesn't hear anything. He climbs into the pit, and Yosef's gone. He runs back to the brothers, he tears his clothing, and he says, the kid's gone, what do I do now? It was his bad idea. He said, we'll put him in a pit, we'll see what happens to him. Now the kid's gone, now what happened to him? So they fill him in on what happened. They take Yosef's garment, they tear it, they dip it in goat's blood, and Yehuda brings it to Yaakov, and he says, this is what we found. Can you recognize it? Is your son's garment? Notice the wording, not our brother, but rather your son's garment. And Yaakov recognizes it. He says, yes, it's my son's garment. A wild animal, he says, eyeing all the brothers, must have killed him, must have consumed him. And Yaakov tears his clothing, sits in mourning, and is not willing to accept any comfort. And the brothers try for weeks on end to comfort him, and he refuses. He says, I will not stop mourning till the day I die. And after weeks of this going on, the brothers turn to Yehuda and say, wise Alec, where's your brilliant idea now? You told us to sell Yosef. If you would have told us to bring him home, we would have listened to you. Why didn't you say that? Yehuda, until now we respected you. We don't respect you anymore. And so they demote Yehuda. They tell him it's all his fault. And Yehuda takes responsibility. So Yehuda goes into business. And he marries a woman, the daughter of a merchant. And he has three children, Er, Onan, Shelah. And our story will continue, but we will move forward because our story doesn't yet continue. Yosef's down in Egypt. Yosef is down in Egypt, and he is purchased by Potiphar. Potiphar happens to be chief executioner for Pharaoh, and Potiphar is very into promiscuity. He sees a good-looking lad, and he purchases him as an idea that he's going to sleep with him. And Potiphar finds himself suddenly castrated, and so it doesn't work, and Potiphar's wife is not too happy with him either now. So we have on tradition that he thought it was a coincidence. The angel that was protecting Yosef came down there and caused Potiphar to have this accident where he was suddenly deeply castrated to the point where no doctor could cure him. So he becomes a eunuch. And now he has Yosef. What's he supposed to do with him? Doesn't say. It says Gabriel came and tore him to the core. Says he castrated him as deep as you can castrate it. It says he castrated him to the point where he was torn all the way. No one could fix it. Yes?
Wouldn't it say that he was having relations with his wife afterwards, though, after she's telling him about Yosef?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. There's a medrash that says that he was not a eunuch. Or that even as a eunuch, they would do some act of husband and wife, whatever they did. Yosef has exceptional success, and everyone likes him, and Potiphar appoints him in charge of his house, and he's in charge of all the accounting, and he's very good looking, and Potiphar's wife tells him, I want you to sleep with me, and he keeps refusing, and she waits until everyone's out. It's a special holiday. The Nile is overflowing, and everyone's going out to celebrate, and she says, I don't feel well. Now Yosef comes home, and he's thinking of her, and she's thinking of him, and she grabs him and says, come sleep with me. And he looks at the window, and he sees his own reflection, and he's reached an age where he looks just like his father, and he sees his father in that reflection. He says, I can't do that, yikes! And he runs, and as he runs, she grabs the robe he's wearing, and in those days they didn't wear anything under the robe, and he runs out of the house, and she holds on to the robe, and now he's out in the street all naked, and people are walking around, and they see him outside all naked. So now what's he supposed to do? What's she supposed to do? So people are starting to come back home, and she starts yelling, and they say, what happened? And she says, didn't you hear me yelling? And they say, no, I've been yelling. This Hebrew, look at what he tried to do to me. And so they're going to take him to court, and we'll discuss that at greater length when we review the parasha. And so his boss throws him to jail. And over there in jail, again, he finds favor in the eyes of the head jailer, and he gives him charge to be in charge of everything. And one day he sees they throw in two new inmates. the baker as being a little bit lax in his job and his duty, and he ends up having a stone in the bread, and Pharaoh bites his bread, and he takes the stone, and he throws him into jail. And the butler brings Pharaoh some wine to drink, and there's a fly in his wine, so he throws him to jail. And they both have dreams, and Yosef interprets their dreams, and he tells the baker, in 3 days Pharaoh's going to hang you. And he tells the butler, in 3 days Pharaoh will reinstate you. And his interpretation comes true. And then Yosef asks the butler, do me a favor, I have no way out of here unless you mention me to Pharaoh. Maybe I will be saved. And the butler is a very cruel person. And although he remembers Yosef, he takes great pains to put him out of his mind, and he doesn't return the favor. And that's how our parsha ends, with Yosef in jail. 2 more years are going to pass, and he is there without any glimmer of hope. We will now start a parsha and start seeing what's really going on here. So Yaakov's had a very difficult life, right? He had his time learning, and from the time he took the blessings from Esav, he's been on the run. He comes to Laban, he's swindled. He's swindled out of his first wife. He has to work 7 more years for free. Then he has to deal with Laban trying to cheat him out of everything. He runs away from Laban. Laban catches up to him. He finishes with Laban, who threatens to kill him, makes this pact with his father-in-law. I'll never see you again, and you'll never see me again. A very wonderful pact with the father-in-law. And then he moves on to deal with Esav, who wants to kill him. He finishes dealing with Esav, his daughter Dinah's abducted. He finishes with Dinah, his wife Rachel passes away. His wife Rachel is buried, and he has the story of Reuven. And now Yaakov finally wants to settle down, and he's teaching his son Yosef, and Hashem says, hey, if you settle down, then you have to be exiled. I promised Avram that after he dies, I will exile his children to Egypt. The only way we can avoid being exiled to Egypt is by the patriarchs not treating life as though they can settle down. If you treat the land of Israel as a land that's not yours, as a guest, as someone who has to fear the masters of the land, so then you can continue here, and we'll consider it the 400 years of exile. But now you've had this great victory against the Amori. Your children killed the people of Shechem. You had an amazing war where nations gathered, nations upon nations, and you were victorious against them. And now you want to settle down. You can't settle down, because I told Avram you can have 400 years of exile. So in heaven there's a discussion. Should we send in a legion of bandits, pirates? They'll come in and take Yaakov down in shackles to Egypt. No, he doesn't deserve that. So there's a discussion. What should we do? And Yaakov makes a mistake. He treats Yosef differently than his other children. And even though his children are extraordinarily pious, and if we look deep into the verses, we'll see that although on the surface we see the sin, the tremendous, it seems very cruel what the brothers did to Yosef, but beneath the surface, if you look closely, you see great piety by the brothers. And even so, they were affected when their father treated one as a favorite. So even though a parent might have a greater affinity for one child than the next, and you can't control the way you feel, but you can control the way you behave. And our sages say, a person should never treat one child differently. So Yaakov makes a slight mistake, but he's going to pay for that. And because of that slight mistake, we won't be able to live out our 400 years in Israel. We will have to descend to Egypt. So even though in heaven they decide they're not sending in a group of pirates to take him down in shackles, they're going to cause this whole story to evolve, and Yosef will end up in Egypt, and we will come down to Egypt as the most respected people. And it's only as we sin that our status in Egypt changes. But initially we were the most respected. We were aristocracy in Egypt. We lived in our own territory in the land of Goshen that we legally owned. But all of this is because of the enmity that was growing in Yaakov's house, which stemmed from Yaakov's mistake in treating Yosef different. Even though Yosef was technically his firstborn son. He was the firstborn from Rachel, his chosen wife. Yosef was technically the child he wanted in his life. And Yosef was smarter and sharper than his siblings. He was exceptional, but he shouldn't have treated him exceptionally. And so the brothers are very honest. And when they feel bad with Yosef, they don't play games. They don't talk to him. They show him, we're not interested. We're upset. How often do we take the easy route and we ignore our feelings and we don't deal with an issue and we just make believe everything's all right, and then things simmer and simmer until they explode. Yes.
So you're mentioning now the Rashi where like they couldn't say one thing with their heart and another thing with their mouths, but how come later in the parsha they're able to console Yaakov if they know that their brother isn't dead? Isn't that this like two sides of the same coin?
You see, they weren't able.
No, they weren't able, but they still spoke to him. They still tried to console him.
You don't know what words they said to comfort Yaakov. Could be they used words that were truthful. Comforting doesn't have to be a lie.
Yeah, but if he's not dead, they know he's not dead, but what's right? The comfort? Like, why not just tell him, isn't that also Naki Gudavahim?
No, because they figured that if they tell Yaakov, firstly, they're going to spend the next 13 years without doing tshuva. For 13 years, they're going to feel like he had it in. We shouldn't have done it because we shouldn't have hurt our father. But Yosef deserved it. It's going to take 13 years until the brothers will have a change of heart. And it's a machlokus whether they ever did tshuva for this. And if they had it in for Yosef, they felt Yosef deserves this. Look at what Yosef's doing. Reuven sins, whatever he did with Yaakov's wife, with Bilhah, Yaakov didn't know about it. Yosef comes charging in and says, look at what Reuven did. So he bumps Reuven out of his right to the kingship, the firstborn, a double portion. He kicks Reuven out of his post. Next, Yosef comes in and says, the brothers aren't careful about eating kosher. Next, Yosef comes in and says, the brothers aren't careful about respecting their siblings. Next, Yosef comes in and says, the brothers aren't careful about which women they're marrying. So Yosef keeps putting down the brothers, and the brothers see a threat. We are supposed to be a continuation of Yaakov. There are supposed to be 12 tribes. But he's threatening our existence, our spiritual existence. He's putting us in a light, and Yaakov's believing what he's saying. Notice how Lashon Hara here is again a root of destruction in the Jewish people. And Yaakov believes it, and they say, if this goes on, we have no future here. He's going to destroy our future and the Jewish people. Look, Yaakov grew up in a house where his father chose one son and the other one was out, right? Yaakov was the continuation. Yitzchak grew up in a house where Avram chose one son and Yishmael was out. He got gifts, but he's not a continuation. So the brothers tell themselves, look, he's going to try to cause us to be out, and he will be the continuation of the Jewish people. Well, then he should be out, and we should be the continuation of the Jewish people. And they sit down, and they convene a court, and Hashem agrees with them. On some level, you see, there was justice to what they were saying, because when they convened a court, we have a tradition that they had 9, because Benjamin wasn't there, and Reuven wasn't there. Reuven was out hiding, and you see, Hashem was willing to go in with them. Yitzchak knows what's going on. It says that as Yaakov was mourning, Vayevkoto Aviv. So the simple reading of the verse is that Joseph's father was weeping over him. Our sages say no. Yaakov's father was weeping over him. Yitzchak knew everything that was going on. Yitzchak knew Yosef was alive. Yitzchak knew the brother sold him. Yitzchak knew that his son was mourning over nothing. So Yitzchak was weeping over Yaakov, but he doesn't tell Yaakov. So it certainly sounds like there was a lot of merit to the brothers feeling threatened by Yosef, to the point of doing such an act. On the other hand, we're paying the price till today for that sinat chinam, that hatred that was in the family. So Yosef has a vision which he feels is prophetic, and maybe if the brothers hear it, then the brothers will view him as their king. They'll realize that that's the direction things should go in. And he tells them, I had this dream where we're all making piles of wheat, and your pile's all bow to my pile, which is what's going to happen. We know next week's parsha, Yosef's going to become king, and he's going to support all the brothers, and everyone will really bow to him. And the brothers are upset by it. Now, when we're upset by something, sometimes that precludes our seeing the truth. Sometimes someone tells us something, and we don't want that to be true. So we argue, and the basis for our argument is, how can you even think that? You guys know the proof that Avram Avinu wore a yarmulke, right? It says that Avram went to greet the guests. Can you imagine Avram would walk without a yarmulke? No, of course, Avram wore a yarmulke. So sometimes our logic is just that. Can you imagine it differently? Of course it's this way. So the brothers come to Yosef and they say, you really think you're going to be king? What's wrong? Maybe yes. No, they can't imagine it that way. But why? And then you see it does come true. So, he has another dream, and again he tells the brothers, and in this dream he reveals a secret that Yaakov is called Shemesh. We know that Esav is Shemesh, right? The Christian calendar goes by the sun. The Muslim calendar goes by the moon. The Jewish calendar mixes both of them, Shemesh and Yerech. We have a lunar calendar that has a that modifies itself with the leap year for the solar year, right? The Christians write from, when you write English, left to right. The Muslims write from right to left. When you write Hebrew, you write from right to left, but you always pull the quill from left to right. We're always considered the middle. There's the right, there's the left. That's what Eliezer tells Lavan. He tells Besuel. He says, I could go to the right, I could go to the left. I could go to Yishmael, I could go to Edom. I got where to go. But we're supposed to be in the middle. We're supposed to be the fusion, the balance between them. So Yosef has the dream and he sees the sun and the moon. And here we see this concept again that one who raises a child is considered their parent. Even in halacha, an adoptive parent can be, their name can be used when a person gets an aliyah or when a person writes a ksuba. He can sometimes be called Ben so-and-so. We find it in Tanakh that people who raise the child are called that child's parents in Tanakh. So having a child it has two aspects to it. One is biologically procreating, bringing the child physically to the world. And the other one is educating the child. People think the mitzvah is just to have kids. No, if you have 15 kids and you can't educate them, you can't take care of them, pruvu means taking care of them. They should grow up to be observant Jews. So, yes?
What are the difficulties with the this parsha? In general, but this parsha, because we're talking about the Shvatim, like what will become like the Am Yisrael, like in 12 tribes, and when we talk about these events and assume, like, to talk about Yosef having a dream and they not understanding the dream, it sounds like they're normal, showing a normal level of understanding of things, you know.
Your question is good, Amir. Fine. So the Gemara on Tractate Brachos tells us the following story. It says that there was once a king who asked one of the Amoraim. He said, tell me what I'm going to dream about tonight. You guys are so smart, tell me what I'm going to dream tonight, right? Daniel could tell him the dream and the interpretation. Joseph will be able to say the dream and the interpretation. I want you to tell me in advance what the dream is going to be in the interpretation. So he tells him, well, you have this country nearby that's threatening you with war, and you're going to dream about a war with them. So the guy spends all day worrying about that dream, and at night he really has that dream. So the Talmud tells us a rule, that a person dreams what he contemplates during the day. A person dreams mehiru rei libo, the feelings, and that's the term that's actually stated in the verse in Daniel. It says that your thoughts, Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar, what you were worried about all day, the question of what would be with your kingdom after you die, those thoughts came up to your mind at night and formed the dream. And Hashem was revealing to you what would actually happen after you die and the kingdoms on planet Earth all the way through the Messiah. Now I'll tell you what your dream was. So we have this rule. So when the brothers are coming to Yosef with a claim, they're saying, you dreamt this because this is what you're thinking about all day. You keep thinking about how you're going to be boss over all of us. Why is that what you're thinking about? So that's from a Talmudic perspective, that's the conversation. Does your dream have prophetic weight or not? Well, that's a good question. It says that sometimes dreams have prophetic weight and sometimes they don't. Where were Yosef's dreams? Yosef thought they had prophetic weight and the brothers did not. Yaakov Avinu, when he hears the dream, represents him as Shemesh, as sun. Yaakov mutters to himself, who told you I'm called Shemesh? Because in Kabbalistic terms, Yaakov is referred to as Shemesh. We had that in last week's parasha. It says, it was dawn for sun. What does that mean, it was dawn for sun? So I say, just say it was dawn, the sun rose, for Yaakov Avinu, whose nickname is sun. Vayizrach lo, there was sunrise for Hashemesh, the sun. That's how our sages read that pasuk. Okay, so Yaakov is waiting. V'aviv shamar et adavar. Yaakov is waiting. When's this vision going to come true? And the brothers go on a vacation. They go to Shechem. They want to enjoy some of the loot. They want to enjoy a vacation in Shechem. So they're not really going to shepherd the sheep. They're going to take care of themselves. And Yaakov's aware of that. So he tells his brother, he tells Yosef, go check out how your brothers are. And Yosef says, whatever you want, Dad. And he's well aware that it's not such a smart thing to go to the brothers. So this whole story shouldn't have happened. Yaakov shouldn't have sent him. Yosef shouldn't have agreed to go. That's why the pasuk says, Ve'ishlechehu me'emek Chevron. Hashem sent him from the deep plan of the exile that Hashem had discussed with those that are called his friends. Chevron is a reference to the patriarchs who are called Chaverim, so to speak, Hashem's friends, the ones that Hashem likes. Hashem sends him from the depths of Chevron. Hashem is sending him from that deep plan that Hashem had made up with Abraham, who is buried in Chevron. And Yosef comes to Shechem. And here you see an angel's coming to guide him to ensure that the story plays itself out. Sometimes in life you see things just, the constellations, everything's set up to play itself out. Hashem wants this to happen. So we convince ourselves that we know when Hashem wants something to happen. That's very dangerous. But the Torah tells us that here Hashem sent an angel to tell him, I heard where your brothers are going. That's where they're going. And so Yosef goes, because had Yosef, the way it should have played itself out is Yosef should have come. He shouldn't have found them. He should have gone back home. So our story takes place approximately 50 years ago. There's a young man who can't find his shidduch. He can't, nothing he does works. And he's traveling cross country, and there's an unexpected snowstorm, and he's stranded for Shabbos in some far out Hicksville town. And they put him up for Shabbos, and the rest is history. He meets his wife there, and would have never met her. No shadchan knew him that knew her. But he got stranded in that city, so he met her, and their son was my best friend all our elementary school days. Sometimes Hashem sets things up, and you can't miss it. You know, it's there. I could tell you about a guy who he agreed to date a girl, and about a day later, someone walks over to him and says, did you call her? So he says, whom? So the guy says, your wife. And he says, I don't know who you're talking about, but someone else set me up with a girl, and I already agreed to go out with her. So who are you talking about? And he says, I don't. The second fellow who approached him says to him, you know, my wife already told the girl you're going to call, and it's really not nice, so go figure out what's happening. So he says, wait a second. And he goes back to the first guy who set him up, and he says, am I obligated to the first girl? Because there's been a misunderstanding here. I don't know what happened. Should I, you know, is there a way out? So they tell him, no, we already asked the girl, but let's call the girl and see if she's interested. So the girl says she's not interested. So he comes back to the second guy, and he tells him, okay, now, what are you talking about? Who did your wife set me up with? So the second guy says, I don't know, but here's the number, call the girl. So he says, what do you mean call the girl? I don't know who I'm calling. So he says, call my wife, she'll give you the name. So he says, but you didn't ask me. I don't know what girl this is. And the second guy says, I don't know, but you're the first guy this girl is dating, so it's really not nice for you to suddenly pull out. So the guy looks at him and says, gee, I remember the first girl I was supposed to date. That's exactly what happened. I call her up, and she says, who are you? And then he says, oh, they told me you're expecting my call. And she says, I don't know, there's a misunderstanding. And with that, it basically ends. So he says, I'm not going to do that to this girl. Fine, I don't know who the girl is, but I'll go out on a date. And the rest is history. She's my wife. The story's about me. True story. The rest is history. I didn't know who I was going to date her. I didn't know who I was dating. It was a misunderstanding. Don't ask me. I don't know how I ended up dating her. They didn't ask me. All right. Yeah, okay. So sometimes you look at things and you say, wait, how did that happen? I don't understand that.
How was that 50 years ago?
No, the first story was 50 years ago. Where's it? This story isn't 50 years ago. No. The second guy knew me. He was friends with me, yeah. But I don't know. There was a misunderstanding, miscommunication between him and his wife. I called my wife. I didn't know how it was cool. Turns out she went to the same elementary school I went to. We grew up like a 10-minute drive from one another.
You called your future to be wife.
Right. I called her up. Yeah, okay, so sometimes you look at something and you say, wait, how did that happen? So Yosef's meant to meet up with his brothers. And so an angel shows up and says, go that way. And he goes. and Shimon and Levi see him in a distance. Remember, Shimon and Levi just wiped out the whole city of Shechem a few years ago. So they look at him and they say, there's that dreamer, and let's kill him. So they have dogs there. They say, let's sick the dogs at him. Shimon says to Levi, I bet you I could down him with one shot of my arrow. And as they're talking about it, everything fails. The dogs don't kill him and the arrows don't come anywhere near him and nothing works. And he shows up and the brothers pounce on him. And he says, guys, what's going on? And before he knows what's going on, Reuven has told the brothers, don't kill him. Put him in one of these pits out here in the desert. They have this deep pit that there's no way he could climb out of. And when he comes, they take off that garment that they were all so jealous of, and they put him in the pit. And that garment represented the special relationship he had with his father, where his father appointed him in charge of all the brothers. His father sends him to check that the brothers are doing it right. His father teaches him the secrets of Torah that he doesn't teach the brothers. Remember, his father accompanied him. That's the last halacha his father taught him. That's halacha also today. That when someone leaves, and they're especially if they're going in dangerous territory, you have to accompany them. I was supposed to have a very, very important meeting, Matzei Shabbos. This goes back half a year ago. And my father was visiting by us. He was by us for Shabbos, and he had to drive back to Jerusalem. And my father didn't know the way. And I had people, like really important people, coming out to Kochav Yaakov for the meeting. And I tried to find someone who would go with my father. I couldn't find anyone. So I went with my father all the way back to Jerusalem. And then zoomed back, showed up late for the meeting, but that's the halacha. If you have a guest, it could be your own father. If they have to travel in a place where it could be dangerous, you know, one wrong turn, you could be in a very dangerous place in our neck of the woods. So you're not, part of Hachnasas Arkham is you have to accompany them. Take them back. Your time is sometimes very pressured, but that's part of Achnasat Orchim. You have to accompany them back to a place where they're secure going without you, where they know their way. So Yaakov walks Yosef. That's the last halacha he's going to teach Yosef. What's called Egla Rufa. We have a term in, we'll learn this mitzvah later on, if a person's found murdered. So the closest city, we try to find out who murdered him. If we don't know, so then the closest city measures out and they bring out a calf and they have this whole procession where they slaughter the calf and the elders come and say, we won't have a hand in his murder. Our sages say, who thought the elders would have a hand in his murder? Our sages say, what it means is we didn't neglect our duties to ensure that in our city a person gets accompanied when he leaves to ensure that he's on a safe path. We took care of our duties. From there, we learned the mitzvah of levaya. You have a guest, you accompany him. If they don't need it for safety, you accompany them 4 feet. You take 4 steps with him. When people would visit Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, he would stand outside as the car was leaving and wave. Now, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky had many important things to do. He was the chief educator in the United States after World War II. He was in charge of education. He guided how education would work in the United States after World War II. And if he'd have a guest, he'd walk the guest out, and as the car was pulling out, he'd stand there waving. Because that feeling, when someone walks with you as you leave, they give you that feeling that they enjoyed your stay. That's what gives you a good taste. Sometimes you leave, and they're, bye, close the door. That's it. You have a feeling that you were a nuisance. The whole visit gets this feeling like I was a pain in the neck. But if you give them that last feeling that you were happy they were there, so that's levaya. So that's the last thing Yaakov's going to teach Yosef before he disappears. So Reuven convinces them, put him in these deep pits out here in the desert. You have nothing to worry about. They are deep pits, so they don't see what's on bottom. They don't realize there are snakes and scorpions down there. So they toss him into the pit. And Yosef is down in the pit, and he sees all around him snakes and scorpions, and he's scared the daylights out of him, and he's yelling, don't do this to me, guys, come on, it's enough, take me out of here. He's begging them, they walk away, they can't hear him yelling, and they sit down to eat. We have halacha, you're not allowed to eat. After court rules to kill someone, they're not allowed to eat. So the brothers figure, he's not dead, we didn't kill him, he's in the pit. They walk away and they sit down to eat. Now here we have two different opinions as to what transpires. One opinion is the way we described earlier. They see the caravan, they take him out of the pit, they sell him, and we discussed last week that the all the children of Abraham, other than Yitzchak, were called Yishmaelim. And being that Midian was one of his children, that's why in the parasha sometimes they're called Midianites, sometimes they're called Yishmaelim. Another opinion says, the brothers were sitting far away. And the Midianites come by, and they look into the pit, and they hear a kid, and they take out a white boy, and they look at him and they say, this is a white boy, wow, we're going to get good money for him. So they sell him to the Yishmaelim. And then the Ishmaelim take him down to Egypt. And the Midianites are going down to Egypt. And when the brothers come back to the pit, they don't see Yosef.
Oh, no, it was
the right boy. A different time we'll have to talk about that. And when they come down to Egypt, so they put him on the slave market. Now in Egypt, everyone's black. So they see the Ishmaelim, who are also dark, selling a white boy. So they tell the Ishmaelim, no way. How did you get a guy like that? A guy with curls, blue eyes, come on, no way. So the Ishmaelim say, we bought him from them. They go to the next caravan over, and they say, see these Midianites, they sold him to us. The Midianites say, it's true. So the Midianites sign the deed on Yosef, and the Ishmaelim sign the deed on Yosef, and Yosef's value keeps going up in the slave market in Egypt. Word goes out, and they hear, hey, we got a white boy, never had that here in the slave market here in Egypt, because the white men were free men. I'm saying in those days too. So it was unusual, and that's why Yosef ends up being in the top house. He gets sold into Potiphar's house. Potiphar is a top man by Pharaoh. So Potiphar hires Yosef, he buys him. It's been validated that he's a slave. The Yishmaelim prove it from the Midianites, and Yosef's exchanged hands. I mean, many people have bought him already. And finally, Potiphar buys him, and we said what intention Potiphar has, and he brings him home. And we will continue with that in a little bit. Now we have to fill in the story we left out. So the brothers take him out and they buy shoes for all of them, as we read in Haftarah. Ve'vyon ba'avur na'alayim. When they take Yosef out, so the Yishmaelim, I'm going with that shot, that the brothers actually sold him. The Yishmaelim look at him and they say, he looks sick. Because Yosef has been trembling down there in fear. He's lost all his color. Now he doesn't look too impressive when they take him out of that pit after all the time he spent with the snakes and scorpions. So they only fetch a small amount of money for him. They each buy a pair of shoes. They buy a pair for Reuven. They know his size, I guess. They buy a pair for Reuven too. And when Reuven will come back, he'll get his pair of shoes. So they sell him down as a slave. And they figure, that's it. We've undone his dream. And this is a recurring theme in the parasha. The idea that we have to do our hishtadlut, but at the end of the day, Hashem has a plan, and that's where the world is headed. That's the theme that we discuss on Rosh Hashanah, right? On Rosh Hashanah, we say on the one end, Hashem, you created the world on this day. Malchuyot, you're king. Then we say, Zichronot, you're going to evaluate all of us for how we've behaved and decide what kind of year we're going to have. And then we blow shofar, we say shofarot. But you have an overall plan, and the world is headed in an overall direction. In our little world, we have to do things right. We're getting judged based on our behavior until now. But in the broader scheme of things, you have a plan, and you're going to bring the world where you plan on bringing it. We have to try to be an integral part of propelling the world for good. But at the end of the day, you have the plan. So look at how this is a recurring theme. Our parasha begins, Yaakov wants to have peace. What happens? Boom, Yosef disappears. He has fights within his house. Yosef gets sold by the brothers to ensure he won't become king. It's actually their sale that will propel him to the rulership. Reuven says, I'm going to save him. Throw him into the pit. By saying throw him into the pit, he actually facilitates his ultimate sale. Yehuda comes back and says, we benefit nothing by throwing him into the pit. Let's sell him. Really, by selling him, they end up having their father mourn over him. Why is Yaakov mourning? Because his son's dead, but really his son's not dead. Tamar, we're about to read the story of Yehuda and Tamar. Yehuda hears, Tamar's gone with another man. Kill her, right? Who's that other man? It's none other than Yehuda. Yehuda comes up and says, oh, she was right. She was right, I'm wrong. Yosef's thrown into the pit. Why? Because he did something wrong with Potiphar's wife. But he didn't do anything wrong with Potiphar's wife. The whole parasha shows us how the world can be upside down. Our parasha is a microcosm of the world, and we have two places where this is shown to us so acutely. One is the story of Yosef, and the other one is the story of Yosef's descendant, Mordechai and Esther. In the story of Mordechai and Esther, you have the whole story repeating itself. Everything is not what you think it is. Right? Esther is not who you think Esther is. Mordechai is not who you think Mordechai is. Haman is not who you think Haman is. Achshveirosh is not who you think he is. Nothing's the way you think it is. They're planning to kill him on this day, and they're not going to kill him. They make a party. They're mourning. They think they should be mourning. Really, they should be celebrating. Haman thinks he's building the tree for Mordechai. Really, he's going to hang on it himself. Everything's the exact opposite of what they think. Haman's daughter looks out the window. She's sure it's her father sitting on the horse, and Mordechai's pulling the horse. Really, it's Haman pulling the horse, and it's Mordechai sitting on the horse. She throws the feces out the window. She's sure she's hitting her Mordechai on the head. She's really hitting her father on the head. Everything's the exact opposite of what you think it is. That's the story of, and if you'll pay attention, you'll see that the wording of Megillas Esther is very, very similar to the wording of the story of Yosef. There are many, many terms. Yosef gets taken out on a chariot. Mordechai gets taken out on a chariot. Yosef gets royal clothing. Mordechai gets royal clothing. You'll see, the king takes off his ring for Haman and then for Mordechai. The king takes off his ring for Yosef. The king tells Yosef, nothing will happen here without your say-so. The king tells Mordechai, nothing will happen here without your say-so. You'll see the story follows a similar theme, and that's part of the message here. On the one end, we have to do our hishtadlut. We're responsible to move the world forward. On the other end, we have to know that we're limited in our capacity to change things. There is a hand that guides everything. So, we'll end with a quick 3-minute Dvar Torah, and then we'll continue the Parsha B'ezrat Hashem Thursday night. We haven't even touched on all the beautiful, interesting things. There's a lot to discuss on the Parsha. So we left off with Yosef's sale, and this is where we'll pick up B'ezrat Hashem on Thursday night. Quick Dvar Torah.